We now broadcast the 32nd episode or chapter in our ongoing historical series, where we look at the lives and legends of the people and places that went into the making of the Vatican. Today's episode tells us more about Michelangelo's story and his troubled relationship with Pope Julius II. The programme is written and presented by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett.
The early decades of the 16th century saw an increase in population and production. The wealth of the New World was affecting the old order in Europe. Vast mineral treasures of Mexico and Peru began to pour across the Atlantic.
The course of trade was shifting, and new powers were emerging, England, France and Holland, all with ports and harbours which gave easy access to the oceans.
The Reformation continued to advance, with Calvin leading the Protestants of France and Switzerland.
In 1541, John Knox brought the Reformation to Scotland, and in the same year, Francis Xavier, with three Jesuit companions, sailed from Lisbon for the Indies.
In 1545, the opening of the Council of Trent launched the Counter-Reformation.
And far from all the turmoil, an old man was working quietly in the Vatican.
Of all the Renaissance artists who brought their talents to Rome, none has left a more indelible stamp on the city than Michelangelo. His presence is everywhere, from the Dome of St. Peter's in the heart of Christian Rome to the Piazza del Campidoglio, the civic and official centre of the city. Michelangelo was an old man when he designed this square and the flight of steps up to the Capitol, made for the triumphal entry of Charles V in 1536.
If Rome owes much to Michelangelo, he too owed something to Rome. In Rome he found his greatest inspiration, and in Rome his genius came to full flowering.
The man who wrenched the course of art in a new direction was born on Sunday the 6th of March in 1475 in the village of Caprese in Tuscany. His father didn't want him to become an artist, but was eventually convinced and apprenticed him to Domenico Ghirlandaio, who ran a large family studio in Florence.
But Michelangelo left long before his contract was up to become a member of the household of Lorenzo the Magnificent, who recognised the boy's potential and adopted him as one of his own. From the great humanists in the Medici circle, Michelangelo gained a philosophical base for his art.
After Lorenzo's death in 1492, Michelangelo left Florence, spent a year in Bologna, and at the age of 21 went to Rome. He was moved by the great stone ruins and sculptures of the past, and when he returned to Florence 5 years later, he'd added his own contribution to the beauty of Rome, the Pietà, his only signed work.
The years of the David followed, and the frescoes of the Battle of Cascina. Then, in 1505, came the summons to Rome. Pope Julius II had seen the Pietà and wanted the artist to design his tomb. It was the beginning of a lifetime of service to the papacy.
Michelangelo worked for 7 popes, but with none of them did he have such a love-hate relationship as with the Pontefice Terribile. Nor did any other piece of work give him more trouble than the tomb of Julius. It dogged his heels for 40 years, and the artist himself described it as a tragedy. The final version is in San Pietro in Vincoli and contains only the Moses by Michelangelo himself.
It was while Michelangelo was at work that Bramante and Raphael managed to convince Julius to suspend the tomb project. It would bring bad luck, he was told, to have it built while he was alive. A much better idea would be to have Michelangelo paint the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. His rivals knew he had no experience of colouring in fresco and hoped he would be discredited by doing it badly. They didn't know their man. At first, Michelangelo tried to evade the commission, but the Pope was immovable.
On May the 10th, 1508, Michelangelo entered the Sistine Chapel. Initially, he called in assistants to help him, but after a short trial, he sacked the lot, locked himself in the chapel, and set to work to cover the 10,000 feet of vaulting, alone. For 4 years, he lay on his back on the scaffolding, paint dripping onto his face and into his eyes. For long afterwards, he could not read a letter unless he held it above him, his head tilted backwards.
Pope Julius seemed hardly aware of the discomfort and difficulties of the artist. After Michelangelo had helped him up the highest ladder, all he could say was, "When will you finish?" And Michelangelo would answer, "When I can," or "When it satisfies me as an artist."
Finally, the Pope threatened to have the artist thrown down from the scaffolding if he didn't finish the ceiling quickly. And Michelangelo, knowing his man, removed the scaffolding and opened the chapel to the public on All Saints' Day, 1512. Writes Vasari, "The whole world came running to see."
It was towards the end of his life that Michelangelo accepted Paul III's commission to take charge of the building of St. Peter's. But he refused to take any payment, and it was declared in a papal decree that he was devoting his time to the fabric for the love of God. Each succeeding pope placed absolute trust in the old artist, though he was subjected to constant irritation by his rivals, who tried to stir up trouble between him and the popes, spreading stories that he was in his dotage and ruining the building. On the contrary, Michelangelo was correcting the mistakes of his predecessors.
Michelangelo suffered much harassment at the hands of his enemies. Yet, despite frequent appeals from Vasari to return to Florence, he felt himself committed to the work on St. Peter's and was anxious to see it finished. He wrote to Vasari,
"My dear Giorgio, as God is my witness, it was against my will that I was forced to start work on the construction of St. Peter's by Pope Paul III 10 years ago. And if work on the fabric had continued up to the present time in the way it started, then enough progress would have been made for me to agree to return home. But for lack of money, the work has been continually delayed. And it is now being held back just as the construction has reached the most exhausting and difficult part. So to abandon it at this stage would mean the shameful waste of all the labors I have undertaken for the love of God during these 10 years. I have lost my memory and my wits, and as writing is not my profession, I find it very irksome. In conclusion, to make you understand what would happen if I abandoned the building and left Rome, first, I would make many thieves happy, and I would be responsible for its ruin, and perhaps for closing it down forever.
The drama was written and presented by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett.